This podcast covers mature, intense, morbid, and sometimes just scary stuff. Listener discretion is advised. A head on a spike, an arm hanging from a branch, eyes that may or may not be following you through the trees. While they may all be made of plastic, these are the first things you see when visiting the Island of the Dolls, considered one of the scariest places on Earth. Welcome to 30 Morbid Minutes.
This is the podcast where we explore topics of a morbid, macabre, dark, and downright grisly nature, and sometimes go on a little dark tourism journey, which we are doing today. I'm Elise Willems.
I'm Jessica Vasami. On a regular day, sometime in the 1950s, Julian Santana Barrera went out to care for the fertile land that was his island, alone as he usually was.
Which in more recent years, he insisted upon being. Julian preferred to tend to the vegetables in the lush, ecological patch of land that his family owned in the middle of Xochimilco.
Of those who knew Julian, some speculated that this type of isolation was for spiritual reasons. Others thought he was spiraling and developing strange habits by nature of being a hermit, possibly even losing his grip on reality.
We may never know what was going on with Julian or his motivation, but we do know where his story goes. One day while walking the shoreline, Julian peered into one of the many canals that crisscrossed the island terrain.
And he saw something floating in the water, tangled in the canal's reef of water lilies. He could make out what looked like a fabric from a dress.
As he got closer to the waterlogged mass, he quickly realized that it was a little girl, face down, her hair in flowy strands, reaching out toward the water.
Next to her was what resembled a second body, one that was much smaller. When Julian reached for it, he felt the fakeness of a doll.
He surmised that the doll belonged to the little girl. Perhaps she was clinging to it when she drowned, or maybe they floated together, caught in the same upstream current.
Nevertheless, Julian was deeply religious and superstitious. If she was not buried, he thought, the little girl's spirit could come back and haunt the island, wandering restless.
So Julian took her lifeless body and buried her on his island in a shallow grave, not knowing who she was or where she came from. Then he took the doll and hung it from a nearby tree so the little girl could play in the afterlife. And here's where his superstition really crept in. Because he thought that maybe if she had her doll to play with, she wouldn't bother him.
And it was the death of this little girl that continued to inspire Julian to transform his island into what is today known as a dark tourism hotspot, La Isla de las Muñecas, or the Island of the Dolls.
Which you can watch a bunch of videos online where they tour it. And we encourage you, as you're listening to this episode or after, to go watch those videos because it will paint a very, very clear picture for you, right, Jess?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, one of them, the one that you have attached, is like only 7 minutes long. So it's like quick bite size, you know, if you don't want to watch the whole thing. But it is quite the spectacle. There's a lot to see here for sure.
Yeah, very atmospheric. And even in the daylight, it paints a very dark picture of a place with a really sad backstory. And so, yeah, go look at some photos as you're listening. Get the whole experience. So to give you a geographical picture of what we're working with here, there is this watery maze of canals that wind through Xochimilco, Mexico. And it's kind of like this array of small islands amidst the canals, the remnants of what was once a big, big lake.
Yeah, and these canals specifically are pocketed with man-made islands built by the Aztecs. So in order to get to these islands, you have to take a gondola-like boat called a trajineras. They're small, colorful boats maneuvered with a pole.
So if you were to take one of these trajineras 2 hours outside of Mexico City, you would find the Islas de las Muñecas.
A long time ago, the island was privately owned by the family called the Barreras, who made sure it was kept in the family. In 1921, the Barreras welcomed their son, Julian Santana Barrera, to the world.
And so this is the Julian we are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Julian did not have an easy life. He was a deeply religious child who grew up to become a deeply religious adult.
Mm-hmm. He would go to the neighboring boroughs of Mexico City to preach the gospel. At the time, only anointed priests were permitted to give sermons and preach about the Bible.
suffice to say, the Catholic communities he visited did not take kindly to what they considered heresy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Julian was publicly beaten on multiple occasions by community members and ran out of town.
The beatings he endured for his preachings led Julian to recede further into his hermit lifestyle and perhaps contributed to an increased level of paranoia.
Now, by this time, he had moved to his family's small private island. And as we mentioned earlier, he tended to and farmed the extremely fertile land here and acted as the island's groundskeeper, in a way. And he would only go back to the mainland city if he had to.
Julian lived in the only structure on the island, if you could call it a structure at all. The slats of wood that made up the walls left large holes and pieces of bamboo lined the ceiling as a makeshift roof.
So he didn't have running water, he had no electricity or heating, and as we've said, he had zero company with him there, too.
So as a recluse in his 30s, Julian started to worry some of his family members. His mental health seemed to be rapidly declining, and he told very outlandish and kind of unbelievable stories.
And one of the stories that we mentioned earlier was about finding the drowned girl who washed up in the canal. He went and told everybody that this happened, and they should look into it, but nobody believed him.
Yeah, his relatives told him that it was all in his imagination. There was never actually a verified account of the girl drowning in the canals, nor was there ever a body recovered.
Which, I mean, I know it was a long time ago, and obviously this is a place where it is a man who's already got a strange reputation living alone on an island, and maybe they're not close to authorities or whatever, but it just, to me, seems kind of bizarre that nobody's looking into, like, this girl at
mm-hmm,
all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one wants to look into it. But again, so many other circumstances in play. There's another version of this story, though, where that might get told because the events are sort of fuzzy. But where Julian doesn't just find the girl, he tried to save her, but failed. So he has this lingering anguish because he wasn't able to save her, and that kind of like drove him mad, leading him to bury her on the island so she didn't haunt him.
No matter the way the girl died, if she ever existed, one part of the story was always the same, and that was the doll. In one version of the story, the doll washed up with the girl. In another, the doll was found floating down the canal the next day.
Was there like a doll factory nearby?
I mean, I don't know.
After burying the girl, Julian pinned her doll to a tree in her memory and sort of used this as kind of a talisman to ward off evil spirits and death from the island.
Sometime after the girl's burial, Julian allegedly found a second doll floating in the canal the next day. Then he began to hear voices. They were like little whispers, and other strange things began to happen.
Tell you, his island's downstream from a doll factory, I'm sure of it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like Jess said, weird stuff started happening. Sometimes he claimed he would find that the doll had moved, like it was hanging from a different tree. Sometimes another doll would appear, one that he didn't put there, or so he said.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he would hear the girl whispering or like screaming from her grave, you know, quiero muñeca, like I want my doll.
Oh, yeah. He believed that she was asking for the doll. So in order to appease her spirit, Julian hung the second doll from the tree. So things were sort of normal for a while. And we'll find out how the island took a turn for the morbid after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back to our good friends over at Diet Smoke.
You might know Diet Smoke for their award-winning THC gummies. What you might not know is they are taking over the mushroom space as well.
Ooh, whether you're looking for a microdose, a boost of positive energy, or a full trip, Diet Smoke has the shroom gummy for you.
I just got a delivery last night that includes the white peach gummies.
Ooh.
In a jazz, which I love peach flavor.
I do
so
too.
I'm into that, but I'm also excited for the aftermath of the taste, you know?
I love the Blue Boomers myself.
So what I've learned, Jess, is that if you're looking to microdose, you know, you can take like one and that might just make you feel kind of like happy and at ease and peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
You take three and you might have a little bit more of a experience there.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to, depending on how long today's workday is.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And so like, if I want to take a little bit more, I'm going to reserve that on like a Saturday where I'm like, I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to relax and I'm going to enjoy my day. You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. And if you're not sure which shroom gummy is best for you, Diet Smoke has a customer service team that can answer any questions you might have. Consider them your own THC and mushroom sommelier.
I love it. So for the next few days, Diet Smoke's offering 50% off any pack of shroom gummies. So what does that mean exactly? That means for as little as about $20, you could have your new favorite gummies delivered to your door in 48 hours. And all their products are backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee.
Shop now at dietsmoke.com/shrooms and use code MORBID to get 50% off your first pack of shroom gummies.
That's dietsmoke.com/shrooms, code MORBID. Diet Smoke, your guide to bliss.
I'm a huge horror movie fan. I love the culture. And so I love the team over at Dead Meat and their podcast, which is specifically made for us horror lovers.
Yes, it's the podcast hosted by Chelsea Rebecca and James A. Janisse. They're fantastic. And like, even me and you, Elise, we've been watching some horror movies together recently. Yeah. For 30 yeah. minutes. And I've been loving it. And I've been going to Dead Meat to understand more about it.
Yes. And also, like, the recommendations from Dead Meat are solid. Okay. It's part of the podcast is part of the Dead Meat channel on YouTube, which is also home of the Kill Count. They do film reviews, history interviews, even cover games too.
Yeah. And they discuss obviously horror topics such as like, why are kids in horror movies so creepy? Which is a very valid question.
Yes. And also, you know, they get into the nitty gritty of the discourse. Like, why are found footage movies like Paranormal Activity so divisive? Why do husbands in horror movies never believe their wives?
This is so great. These are very yes. valid questions. And honestly, for someone like me who sometimes has an issue with kind of like the demon and related movies, these actually make me feel a little bit better when I understand.
Break it down.
They break it yeah. down. It actually makes me feel better and less mm-hmm. scared.
Yes. So they are a friend of the podcast. We encourage you to check out the Dead Meat podcast. It's for every horror fan, from the well-seasoned to the casual viewer. Even if, like Jess, you might be watching those horror movies through your fingers, so does a lot of their audience. You know, it's a podcast for everyone, a horror podcast for everyone, really.
And I think it makes everybody feel a lot more comfortable with horror movies in general, mm-hmm. which is I'm a huge fan of. So, yeah, episodes release every other Wednesday, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So check out the Dead Meat podcast now. So before the break, we were talking about Julian, who is slowly acquiring this doll collection. And maybe things are getting a little bit weirder on his island. So he's got a couple dolls now. Right. But he is still living sort of his simple life there alone, taking care of the island and the farming he's doing there. But he can't help but notice that there's a little bit of strange things happening around him. And at first he sort of brushes it away until one day, right, Jess?
Yeah. One day while standing on the shore, he saw a doll floating down the canal, then another, a bevy of dolls all pulled into the lake that surrounded his island.
I'm telling you, this island is downstream of a doll factory. I'm sure of it.
Or it's haunted.
Yeah. Or somebody's messing with him at this time. But yeah, so he at this point is like, I can't overlook all these strange things I'm seeing. I am freaked out. And he becomes convinced that the spirit of the little girl who died and drowned is now summoning more dolls. So he starts collecting them and then stringing them up in the trees all around the property.
If this happened to you, Elise, would you do the same thing or would you like throw them out? I'd be like, someone's trying to tell me something.
I mean, I guess I would do some Googles. Like I said, I would be like, where are these dolls coming from? But I mean, I guess at this time, mid 20th century, you can't Google anything. Mm-hmm, and he's mm-hmm. a hermit, so he's not like going around and asking people, hey, do you know where these dolls might be coming from?
Yeah. And they're like, while he's superstitious and a lot of people thought it was all in his imagination, there are these still like very physical, prevalent dolls, though. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes. Also, like, I mean, I suppose we should consider this is the story he's telling people.
That's true.
Right. There's no confirmation. This is what he's telling people. He may have been getting the dolls from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, you want to believe him and believe the story he's saying, especially because it was obvious he was disturbed by this. But mm-hmm. a loner living on this island where people, you know, he's highly superstitious. Who knows maybe what's going through his head and what he's
doing.
Yeah,
you're right. But yeah. Yeah. But these voices kept getting worse. And the little girl was more present than ever. Now the voices screamed, "Quiero mi muñeca," right into his face while he slept. He heard footsteps, even though he was alone and isolated, to his knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, and Julian said that the whispers and the voices continued to intensify. The calls for the muñeca began to torment him day in, day out. He really thought the girl was haunting him and also that she was malevolent.
Julian had other problems. His vegetable crop was failing and he was convinced it was the dark spirits at play. It's more likely that, you know, in his obsession, he forgot to tend to it. But
yeah,
you know, I can see what he's thinking.
Yeah, he's like, damn, my vegetables are dying. And it's like, well, yeah, dude, but you're kind of on this doll banger now. So,
yep.
Yeah. So he's obsessed with what's happening here. And the way he saw it, the answer to dealing with the ghost of this little girl was to get more dolls. Mm. So he gets in his boat and then he, you know, floated down the canal to Mexico City, back where he had been beaten for practicing sermons, despite not being clergy.
Mm-hmm.
I do love the idea. It's like, it's so anti-Christian, right? It is the opposite to beat somebody.
Well,
for
that
being
and the
pious,
whole purpose,
right?
Yeah, and the whole purpose of Christianity, not the whole purpose, but it's like to spread the word of
God. To love your neighbor, right? Yeah, spread the word, love your neighbor.
He's spreading it, but it's like, oh, yeah. Only these people are allowed to spread the word of God. I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. But yes, and love
again,
your neighbor.
I think we do have a little Julian bias here. Because this is what we don't know. Maybe he was just going there and like harassing people. I don't know.
I know. There's a part of me that like feels for him.
Oh, absolutely. Like he clearly was somebody who was troubled and mm-hmm. lonely and, you know, on a path that people didn't understand,
mm-hmm.
whatever
mm-hmm.
that was.
Yeah.
But yeah, if somebody's coming at me and preaching, they're getting a beat down. Okay.
God, Lord.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
We have fun here on this podcast.
We do. We do. Man, you can't listen to this podcast and take it too seriously, you know?
You better know that if someone's coming at us with religion, they're getting beat down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unless it's that coffin birth episode. That was rough.
That's the only time we didn't have fun on this podcast. Yes.
Oh, God. Well, little do you guys know, me and Elise just cackled after that episode. No, just kidding.
Oh, my gosh. We had a whole discussion about, man, never do that again.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Anyway, yeah. Go back and check out our coffin birth episode.
Yeah, you should. Let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, if you're new to the show.
Yeah. But yes, so Julian, went back to Mexico City, and luckily for him, time had passed, and the locals either forgave or totally forgot who he was. So at this point, they just pretty much ignored him.
Yeah, yeah. So he's on a mission here now. He's looking for every doll he can find. Okay, and he's feeling haunted here. He says, "It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they are intact. I will take an arm. I will take a head. I will take just a torso." He dug through trash bins looking for dolls, and he found some dolls, okay?
Oh, yeah, he did. He did. And then he returned to his island with tons of dolls, and he would pin arms and legs to the sides of his cabin. He would drive their heads into the ground on spikes. He strapped eyeless plastic bodies to trees. Insects were crawling out of their eye sockets. You name it. He did it.
Yeah, like, and this is what we think the little girl wants? Okay, I guess. I mean, so yeah. So if you visited the island, you would see this. You would see hundreds of decaying, rotting, matted, and dirt-covered dolls lining walkways and bridges. And this is where we, again, encourage you to watch the videos because you will see nothing else like this.
Yeah.
It's very unreal.
Straight up, I mean, it looks like a horror movie set, honestly.
A set. Yeah, it definitely does. Like, I would have been like, we got to get this man to art department staff, okay? He's got a future in Hollywood.
We got to hire him. That's great. He knows all the best places to get the dolls from. He like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost every inch of the island was covered in what some estimated were about 2,200 of these old and broken dolls.
Damn, that's a lot. There was barely a tree limb or a roof or wall that was not covered in doll pieces. And it's hard to overstate just how many dolls, you know, crowded the small space. Their gaze was inescapable. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just all looking at you.
And then there was also, so like we talked about how there were some that was just like doll pieces not the full doll. And then a lot of them were like dirty or beat up or old. But then Julian did save the dolls that were in better condition for quote unquote special occasions. He would dress them up. He built them special homes. Like there's, you know, a little documentary you can watch online and you can see that there's one doll that's sort of in this little altar and her name's Augustina and she's named after August and, you know, Saint Augustina and stuff. Like he named certain dolls too. But, you know, the space that he did this all in was basically a shed. And yeah, like we said, the tourists that have been there say that when you open it, it looks like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But as time went on, Julian began interacting with communities more and more by way of his doll collecting. He started to tell people about his island of dolls, and people were captivated by this very creepy, supposedly haunted island.
Which I also think there's something to this because this was a guy who was a hermit. You know, he shut himself off from the world, and this kind of, I don't know if he had things going on with him, like any, you know, anxieties, or maybe there was some kind of like mental health issue that he was dealing with. But in a way, this thing that was a big point of kind of distress for him ultimately became a little bit of an olive branch, right? To reach out to communities and people. It also became a little bit of a money-making app, right? Because he did, yeah, he did realize that people would pay him money if he brought them to his island. And so by the 1990s, he supplemented a good chunk of his income by offering tours. Remember, he has forgotten about the farm
vegetables.
So he needs this.
And by 2001, he was almost entirely relying on the tours for income. And his nephew was helping him work the island, too.
It's a family business.
Sure is.
But then things kind of like took a dark turn. Again, I mean, how many dark turns? We're taking a lot of a lot of dark turns here. But then one day in early 2001, Julian turned to his nephew and he told him this self-prophecy that he believed he, Julian, was going to die soon. And not only die, but die in the same place and in the same way that the little girl he had found so many years ago did.
Ooh. Caught off guard, his nephew thought nothing of it. He knew that Julian lived on a different spiritual plane than most people, so he kind of reassured his uncle, shrugged it off, and then just went back to work.
But yeah, later that day, sure enough, Julian wanders off. And then his nephew can't find him, so he goes down to the shore to look for him.
And it was there he saw Julian, dead, face down in the water, right where he had found the dead girl 50 years before. And whether it's truth or myth, the story goes that it was on the exact day he had discovered her corpse.
Eerie. Yeah. Official reports list his cause of death as a heart attack, and the drowning was incidental to that. And on the day when his uncle told him, "I think this is going to happen to me," you know, Julian's nephew, Rogelio, just kind of shrugged it off. But now if you ask him, he'll say the spirit of the girl came to him and dragged his uncle into the water. He's a believer. And we talk about cultural priming a lot on this podcast and how if you are religious, you might be more inclined to believe in spirits or demons, etc. And it does sound like there's definitely some of that at play here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And after Julian's death, the island was inherited by surviving members of the Barrera family. Today, the island is cared for by Julian's nephew, Santana. He and his wife and their three children do not live there, but they live on their own island about 20 minutes away.
Smart.
Smart.
I wouldn't live there either.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. And of course, like we've sort of talked about it a little bit, but many believe that Julian was experiencing mental illness and that the little girl never even existed. Maybe he made her up in a state of delusion, or maybe, I mean, my opinion too is sometimes if, you know, he's suffering from loneliness or he just needed something to believe in, maybe created this so that way he would have something. But again, you know, it's complicated, and it's one of those things where the island is very much a spectacle, but we definitely don't want to make a spectacle out of this man if he was suffering or dealing with something.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm wondering if around this time, this could have been, again, I wish I would have paid attention to this when reading it the first time, but just like if there was any missing persons, like around that time, if there was a missing girl, I don't know if that ever came up during all of this, just to like kind of triple check everything on what he was saying.
And it doesn't sound like that really happened.
Exactly. You know? Or if there was even a call of like a neighboring town a couple miles away, there wasn't even like a, we're missing someone, but
no,
you know,
it doesn't sound like it went that far. And you never know if it sounds like he had a pretty sad upbringing himself.
Yes.
And who knows if this is some kind of like childhood trauma that is manifesting in this way for him.
But there are some who do believe him. And Santana admits he will occasionally see shadows in the night with the moonlight.
Yeah. And people who go to the island to visit it, which you can do, claim to see the doll heads moving or eyes blinking, which I also think that might just be people on high alert because you're going there and your anxiety is already up.
Oh, yeah.
So you're more inclined to think you saw something.
Yeah.
Santana has stopped collecting new dolls. He's just like, this is it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. But the island of dolls remains the way Barrera left it. When a trajinera approaches the island from the canals, visitors can see the dolls hanging in the low brush that covers the shoreline. Tourists there say that it instinctively kind of makes your heart jump. At a glance, the dolls look like dead, abandoned children, like hanging from everything.
Yep. There are decaying dolls swinging in the trees, discarded torsos and heads pinned to bridges. You know, those who visited, as we said, they have this eerie feeling that they report, like they're being watched.
And we mentioned earlier that Julian had collected 2,200 dolls for the island. Now there are 4,000 dolls that make up the La Island de las Muñecas. Since visitors bring their own dolls to the island to honor Julian and appease his restless doll hunting spirit.
It costs about 2,000 pesos or $100 to take a boat for a 4-hour ride in the canals. And so, yeah, it's like a party boat. You might even get, you know, full service drinks, music, snacks. But you have to specifically ask to be taken to the island of the dolls.
Yeah. And even then it may cost you extra. But first you have to find a tour guide who is willing to take you there, because many aren't, claiming that the island is haunted and it is bad luck to go there.
Mm-hmm. La Isla de las Muñecas is considered one of the top 50 scariest places in the world. Which is, the world is a big place. That's a...
It's up there.
Yeah, it's up there. And that's next to the Amityville House and the Eastern State Penitentiary.
Ooh.
If you can't swing the trip or you're too afraid to go, though, like we said, there are lots of YouTube videos of the place you can check out.
Oh, yeah. But if you do visit it, maybe you will encounter Julian's spirit. And if you do visit or have been, let us know, because... I want to know about your experience.
Yeah, I have to imagine it's an undertaking to get there, you know, so.
Yeah. And just, again, even finding somebody that is willing to get there, too. Or take us.
Yeah. Say you're visiting Mexico, Jess, and you're in the area. Would you go check it out?
There's a lot of places that I would like to check out, I think, before I would check out this place. There's just so much, like, history with, you know, the Aztecs and that. So even though I know the Aztecs man-made built these canals and everything, I want to look at some of the structures there personally. But maybe if I go a couple more times, I'd stop by. Would you?
I'd tack it on to the trip.
I'd just tack it on, you know?
I'd tack it on. I'd tack on a day for the Island of the Dolls. I think I've been to enough places that are purportedly, you know, so haunted. And I've been, you know, that I wouldn't feel creeped out necessarily. I'm sure it's cool and probably very atmospheric to visit. Attack on the day. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's weird because it's like you know, with some of the documentaries, like people very much say like there's absolutely a presence and everything. Like even if there was no girl to begin with, and this was in Julian's mind, you know, I'm sure if other people, it's like if you are feeling a spirit there, it could be just Julian's and not even hers, you know? I would have more reason to believe that Julian's spirit is there than hers. But, I mean, we don't know. We have no idea. So.
Oh, yeah. And the island existed long before he and this little girl. So, you know, who knows what other maybe energy is lingering there.
Just, I mean, they mentioned, again, the Aztecs. Like, God, I can't, the amount of, whew, can't imagine.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much to Shannon, who wrote and researched this episode.
Thank you,
It was
Shannon.
A great one. Mm-hmm. I love when we get to go to little parts of the world.
Oh, for sure.
Podcast.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And thank you again so much for supporting us by sharing and reviewing the show. Very, very much appreciate it. And that's a big thank you to
everyone. It helps.
It does. Yeah. And thank you to everybody who supports us through their patronage for 30 more minutes. Very much appreciated.
We can't say it enough. Tell your mom to listen to the show. She will like it. I promise.
Moms loves the show.
That's our demographic. It's moms.
And kind of
it is.
It is. And some crazy girls like us. Crazy girls. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, we implore you to check out our friends over at Red Web Podcast, Trevor and Alfredo. They make a podcast that if you like this one, you will definitely like Red Web. And also, we mentioned it earlier, but check out Dead Meat. If you're a horror movie fanatic, that is the place for you.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, when we found our 30 Morbid Maps Dark Tourism Company, one of the 30 Morbid stops will be on the Island of Dolls.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe should we make this like a theme? Like
Yes, 30 Morbid Maps. It's our
travel
company. Yes, and we'll make a book that's like, it's just 30 maps, but they're all morbid.
No, but for real, like making this kind of like a theme with our podcast, just doing episodes of like, okay, next on the dark tourism, you know, I don't know. Maybe we should think about that. Like, maybe
two
episodes a season or something where we just do some dark tourism.
That might be motherfuckers, get on board.
Going by train, Betty.
We're going to some haunted places, some spooky locales. Yeah, I think we pepper it in a little bit, but we haven't, like, we've done, you know, the Paris catacombs.
Mm-hmm.
Spooky.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we did the episode about Savannah after I went to Savannah.
Yes, that is true.
But there's more. There's much more.
Oh, God, there's so much more.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be on our maps. You'll see it.
Yes. Well, until we're in the skies or riding the rails, it's a bad bye for now, Jessica.
Bye-bye, Elise. Choo-choo.